4104.
This is the Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwitt. Type 1 diabetic for 28 years. My pancreatically challenged host, be right over that away. That's you.
I'm Dobie Maxwell. I am Mark's friend, cohort, business associate for many years, and I always knew since he was a diabetic that he was a freak of nature, and we dealt with him like that. We worked at a radio station, and I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I joined the Freak Patrol. Mark has helped me be educated, and we have a guest later on that's going to talk to us about diabetes type 1, type 2, and all things about the disease.
And this is the Diabetic Show. We're not really sure which way it's going to go at this stage. Literally, it's new. We've been fortunate to have a chance by our general manager, David Cole. Engineer this morning, Russ Weller. Russ, thank you so much for hopping along. And, we'll give you what diabetes is, what it should be, and hopefully where it's going. And
what it isn't. And I think our guest coming on later, we talked about it. When I first was diagnosed, I thought it was a death sentence. It's a word that you don't hear. When you're not, and you had it a lot longer than I did.
Okay, now for you, Dobie, it was it 5 years now?
Five years.
Okay, and you were a normal, healthy, breathing person.
Well, a typical American, I snorted sugar for breakfast. Yeah. I had watermelon and Mountain Dew and everything that I like, and I didn't know what a carbohydrate was. I couldn't even spell the word carbohydrate. And like I'm a stand-up comedian by trade, and the heaviest thing I lift is a microphone. So there's no exercise whatsoever. Most normal people, quote-unquote, drive 30 to 45 minutes to work an 8 to 10-hour shift. As a comedian, I drive 8 to 10 hours to work a 30 to 45-minute shift. So the exercise and all the things that go into what makes type 2 diabetics, lack of exercise, bad diet, blah, blah, blah. I was the poster child and didn't even know it.
So many check marks in Dobie's column.
Yes, but as we're talking about this, I mean, I know that you were a type 1 for all the time that we worked together, and I just assume, well, that's something that you get, like you're genetically, like your eye color, or you're male or female, or you're a diabetic, blah, blah, blah. And you also heard stories about it. Jay Cutler for the Bears, Ron Santo for the Cubs, I mean, some famous people. And then when you get it yourself, it's like, I didn't know you could acquire this later in life. You never think it's something old people get, something your grandma has.
Well, for me, it was 87 when I was diagnosed, and it was out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Story goes, I lied my way into my first managerial shop in radio, and as I assume most did in the day.
That's how we got the show, Mark.
Yeah, and then you sit down and you realize, well, how can I can't do, I don't know what I'm doing. And then it turned into 18-hour days over a matter of weeks. And next thing I know, I started losing weight, which initially
is a good thing.
Oh, if you want to be a diabetic, that's why
you
would
want to
do it.
Let me ask you this, though, Mark. Very serious question. Was it noticeable to other people? Hey, Mark, you're working out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. At 30 pounds,
were you concerned?
No.
You liked it.
Yeah, 30 pounds in 30 days. And then you start thinking, and you're not really thinking at that stage.
See, but Richard Simmons can't get that much weight off that fast.
How come I knew we'd mention him sometime in the first show?
He's a sponsor of the second segment.
So I go to the emergency ward because at this point, insatiable thirst. I could have a mouthful of water, and I was still thirsty. And then you're starting to think, major diseases. What does cancer feel like? Things like that.
Uh-huh.
No idea that would be what it was. Go into the emergency room and draw the blood as they do. The guy comes back and says, you're at 782.
Is that your credit score?
Don't you wish.
Your bowling average for three games?
I dream. but in this case, it was my blood sugar there on the spot. Apparently, that was only about seven times or so over the 80 to 120 measure that most would say you're non-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It was a week in the hospital.
A week?
A week.
Yes.
Yeah. It was. And then you kind of go through those phases, denial, anger.
Sure.
You're bartering.
How about fear? I was scared to death. I really thought I wasn't going to make it out of the hospital. I really did.
Only when you hear the numbers. And we're going to be getting into that in the second portion of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now you went directly into the hospital upon diagnosis, but you were a little different than me.
Yes, it was at Father's Day, and I don't know how to say this.
Medically. This is National Public Radio.
I understand it's Magic Public Radio, but there's a part of the body that males have and females don't.
Okay, let's get to the crux.
One of my testicles was bigger than the other one.
Okay, thank
you. One was about four times bigger. I never
overnight.
And it happened to be Father's Day, and I'm thinking, well, I don't know why this means anything. Yeah. And both of them would have been bad enough, but one of them. So I thought, well, I don't have any insurance. I'm in the 100% deductible plan because I'm a professional entertainer and self-employed. Yeah. So I didn't got to get a medical checkup. I went to the convenience store, and I had two pieces of watermelon and some Gatorade. No sugar in that.
Oh,
and
Lord,
I went to the, of course, I went to the emergency ward, and I said, I'm having problems with one of my testicles. And not both, one.
And they draw your blood.
They said you have 550.
Ah, I had you.
Yeah, and you had me told by 200, and yeah. I said, is that good? Because I didn't have any idea about that. And they said, and they didn't even bring out the word, you have diabetes. This just rocked my world. And I said, well, what about my don't worry about that. It's diabetes. It turns out that that's the way it manifested itself, and the doctor said it's all different ways because yours wasn't the most pleasant way, and without being too graphic, there was gangrene there, and I had to have I could have lost everything.
See, now we have an over 17 rating on the
show. I'm not trying. I'm just clinical. This is what happened.
I realize.
Mark, so the point is I was in for 8 days.
Oof.
And the whole deal, and of course, it wipes your whole life out. It changes your whole life out. The dietitian comes in and said, "You young man are going to change your." And when you call me a young man, she was up there in 2 minutes. You're going to change your whole life around. And that was the day that it's changed my whole life around.
The one thing I remember from mine, nurse came in, and she said, "Basically, what you've got now is something that you have to eat right. If you look at it that way, you're just going to have to change your entire life
overnight. No warning."
I mean, at the time, I was running a station in Wyoming, and it was mandatory to smoke Marlboro, that and the hat.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I couldn't give that up.
Sure.
There's also maple syrup. Maple syrup is bad. Mm. You know, things like that. Butter? Butter? No, I refuse to believe butter is bad.
Yeah.
Until I ended up going back in the hospital about a week later. I guess you really do have to do the things they tell you to do in the hospital, especially with the dietary habits.
Well, I think everybody's got their story, and hopefully as their show progresses, we can come and make this a kind of a powwow, a treehouse for people that not only have it, but people that in your family, it affected your family life, it affected the people around me, and it just had to check, we're going to have a meal. Oh, and you can't have that.
You know, that's what big brothers are for, and they did it to
me,
too.
We baked a pie, and you can't have it.
I was 27 years old, and I have a 29-year-old taunting me with pecan pie the first Thanksgiving.
And it's not like you can't have anything. It's moderation and less
choices. Choices and moderation.
Choices. And that's what we want to do. We want to educate. We want to make it less clinical and more down to earth and family because it's going to affect somebody in your life if it's not you. And we want to just bring it down to open discussion.
I mean, the bad news for the listening people and the good news for us is there are going to be a lot more diabetics tomorrow than there are today.
Well, yeah.
Bad news for them.
It's good if you
have a show.
Good if you make syringes.
You'd like to think so as well. I'm sure the BTBD folks rather are very happy.
Well, another thing too. I mean, the whole checking your blood sugar and poking yourself with needles. I mean, I hated needles. It's like I could take the biggest spider, the biggest snake, anything that's icky and pooey and people that don't like. But the needles was the one that really was my worst, and I had to overcome that.
I literally left the state. Because like you, I could not do a syringe. And then they're teaching you with the orange in the syringe. I don't care if the orange feels like yours. It's not your skin. It doesn't hurt. Your skin hurts.
Yes, it does.
So I left. I went to the border of Nevada and Wyoming because I figured if I'm going to do this alone, I might as well be in a casino. And so there I'm in the bathroom stall with my thigh. You know, that's the best place to inject.
Sure.
Pinched right there and one, two, one, two, actually, it was probably weirder for the people coming, you know, in and out of that bathroom, you know, listening to the guy in the stall. Couldn't get to three.
Couldn't count to three.
No, could not. But anyway, look, I tell you what. Let's take they don't do breaks here on the state and NPR anymore. We're so out of. There used to be commercial breaks.
Mark,
right
you
here.
And I are radio guys. We're the old time. Remember on the show, if people are listening, laughing. Gary Owens.
Oh my God.
Would be like the announcer. We come from that school of radio. So
we have a great
guest to come up. She's very informative and relaxed and laid back. So she'll fit right in with us.
Very good. This is the Diabetic Show, 91.1 FM, WGTD.
WGTD HD2 plays jazz, big band blues, and more 24/7 on your HD radio, desktop computer, or mobile device. For access options and our new program schedule, visit WGTD.org and click HD2.
WGTD is an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR, a cultural asset and a community resource. WGTD is owned and operated by Gateway Technical College, with additional financial support from the Wisconsin Public Radio Association and local underwriters whose customers value public radio.
FM WGTD. This is the Diabetic Show. I'm Mark Fillette, my host or co-host.
I'm Dobie Maxwell, the Batman and Robin of the diabetic industry, and we have Batgirl coming on. We have a lovely young lady who's going to tell us about the disease from a professional standpoint.
Yeah, and we can look back just a little bit with diabetes quickly. It's been around for as long as we've been around. The earliest doctors, from what I've read, and maybe our guest will help us out, they actually tasted urine to make sure that it was, yes, if it was sugar, you had the diabetes and you were dead within months. These are facts, and I'm sorry to bring it up. Anyway, our special guest.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This would be Donna Swanson from United Hospital Systems. Thanks for joining us, Donna. We aren't maybe the best spokesman for a diabetic show, but you have a degree. You are an RN. You are a diabetic educator. So let's say if I was diagnosed the very first day as a diabetic and I meet you, what's the first thing you say to a new diabetic?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the warm welcome here, Mark and Dobie. I appreciate you having me on. And I think you guys are doing a fabulous job of presenting the diabetic community. This is real life, and when we see people on a daily basis, we see patients that are newly diagnosed and then some that have had diabetes for years. But with our patients that come to us at the time of diagnosis, it's just a very big diagnosis. It's huge. And one of the first things I always try to do with my patients, and I know the group that I work with, we all are in complete agreement with this, is that we want to reassure them that it's not what it was 100 years ago. So, but it's a huge diagnosis. Many people compare it to their diagnosis of diabetes. Most people know the exact day, the exact time they found out.
June 15th, 2011.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's like 9/11. You're exactly right.
November 7th, 1987. Absolutely. That's because I never thought about that.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, we try to make sure that people know there's a great deal of support. The medicine has changed drastically. People are living much longer now than they ever have in history with diabetes, type 1, type 2, and all the subtypes of diabetes. But most people predominantly fall into the type 1.
Can I stop you for 1 second? Sure. What are the subtypes? I'm learning about it all the time.
Well,
what are those? Is there a type 3 out there?
You know, well, I'm not an endocrinologist, but there are several subtypes. And the two most common that I've heard of are MODY and latent onset diabetes. So MODY is like, there's a couple different subtypes of that as well. But so it's maturity onset diabetes of the youth. So that's what that stands for. But they're very rare. Most people, like I would say 90% of the population, fall into the type 2 category.
Sure.
And about 10% fall into the type 1.
Okay, let's break this up.
Yeah.
Type 1 diabetic or diabetes.
Yes.
Exactly what is it doing to the body which makes you a diabetic?
Well, in type 1, usually at the time of diagnosis, a person is, it comes on very acute, very suddenly. And what the most research agrees that they believe it is, there's a trigger that that causes that. It's an autoimmune disease, and they believe a trigger would provoke that immune response. So basically what happens with type 1 is the patient is exposed to some sort of virus or some sort of trigger, and it evokes a immune response. And in that immune response, the cells, the pancreatic cells of the beta cells of the pancreas that are responsible for producing insulin end up getting attacked instead of the virus. So our own immune system is attacking our own cells.
And let's break it down. Let's break it down. I was never big in chemistry, so bear with me. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep up with Don.
Sure.
And don't look at me like that, Dobie. I'm trying.
Don is educating us. I'm listening.
Sugar. It enters your body through the stomach walls as it absorbs into the body. And then you got this sugar hanging in the bloodstream. It is not an energy yet. It needs to be converted into energy for the body to use. That, I believe, is where the insulin comes in, interacts with the glucose. What does it do? What makes it energy? What takes it from the step to the other? Is that the insulin? Is that what I'm not getting?
Well, basically, it's important to understand the differences between the two types of diabetes first. So first of all, type 1, basically in a nutshell, it's an autoimmune disease, and it results in complete insulin deficiency over time. And over a very short amount of time, usually within a year. Some people are able to produce a little bit longer, but by and large, most people with type 1 have complete insulin deficiency within a year. In type 2 patients, that is more characterized by a decreased amount of resistance at the cell and a decreased ability to produce enough insulin to meet the needs of the body's cells. So basically, like what you're talking about with the carbohydrates, we eat carbohydrates, turns into sugar. We need that sugar for energy. In type 1, if we give a patient who does not produce their own insulin anymore, if we just replace the insulin in the proper amount in conjunction to what they're eating, we can sort of mimic what the pancreas should be doing. So let's say a patient eats 45 grams of carb, they need X amount of insulin. And we complete that balance, so as if they weren't diabetic. So we're just trying to copy what their pancreas should be doing. Now, in type 2, it's a little more complex because we're dealing with resistance, and they're still producing insulin.
So it's a line that keeps moving back and forth.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to ask a stupid question. I'm going to do a lot of those throughout the show, but this is one. Now, the Jarvik 7, the artificial heart, do you see someday an artificial pancreas that does the job?
Absolutely. There is two different projects going on right now that I know of. And I mean, there's so much research that I'm even unaware of out there right now. But they have Tandem, I believe, is helping with the bionic pancreas project.
Right, okay.
And then we have Medtronic, insulin pump. They're both insulin pump companies. And Medtronic is working with researchers to develop the artificial pancreas project.
Neat. Okay.
And that one has already got patients actually using it.
Steve, $6 million pancreas.
Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of exciting work with University of Wisconsin Madison, too.
Yes.
So the future is bright. It's just how do you get there from here?
Yes. There's so much research going on. I mean, if we look back 100 years ago and just look at where they were then before insulin came along, and where we are now. I mean, it's just amazing. The stories, listening to your guys' stories and hearing about, you know, the needle was so big, I couldn't, nowadays, when we bring patients into the clinic, and education is so important, because if patients do this solo, it's
overwhelming.
It's just terribly overwhelming. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so much support out there, and when patients tell me they have a fear of needles, I mean, we work with patients constantly. Not everybody has a huge fear of needles, but there's a great big population of patients that do not like needles at all. And if you look at the needles 100 years ago as compared to what we use today,
like a pole vault.
Nowadays people tell us, because we can effectively deliver insulin with the smallest needle on the market, which is, I mean, I'd have to show it to you. It's a 4 millimeter, and I know
that
doesn't
barely pricks the dermis.
It's just barely puncturing the skin, and that's all we have to do with insulin is just get it under the skin into the dermis or into the subcutaneous tissue, and I mean, it's very minor. The most patients tell me that the finger poke actually hurts more than injecting their insulin. And we can make that more comfortable now too.
I have a question about that.
Yeah,
I've moved to the forearm because of that very reason that you're saying.
Yes,
those pricks were terrible. I couldn't do it. I'm to the forearm. Am I doing myself some disservice by doing the forearm test over? See, I look at it and it's 12, 18 inches from the fingertip to the forearm. Difference in the blood?
There is, and it's likely most research agrees that there's not. It's not as accurate to do alternate site testing.
Depressing. Than, I mean, isn't it close? I mean, you know, can it be consistently off so you could, you know, let's just say, well, it's 18% always too high or too low, or is it just because the blood is just different there?
It's there's more variable results with alternate sites, and but there is, you know, any meter on the market, there is a small margin of error already.
So
that's why we try to get the most accurate sample possible. But you know, the good news is that even, you know, there are techniques that can be used, and most of these meters, maybe just switching lancing devices might be enough to make that finger prick a little less painful.
Oh, yeah, I tell you what, let's take a break right here.
My brain needs to cool off. That's a lot of information. Well, that's great stuff, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm feeling good about the, you know, the well, not that good. Well, I'm torn. I tell you what, let's do it here. We'll take real quick musical lude or whatever they
Thank
do
Thank you to Donna Swanson, our guest.
Yeah, Donna Swanson from the United Hospital System. I'll get that real good. 91.1 FM WGTD. This is the Diabetic Show.
WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer. My gosh. You really made me think. You really read the book. Yeah.
No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg holds the Morning Show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD.
This is the Diabetic Show, third portion. My name is Mark Philwett. Dobie Maxwell right there.
I'm riding sidecar.
Okay, and our very special guest this afternoon, or this morning, since this Saturday.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, buddy.
Donna Swanson, United Hospital System.
And Donna, I want to ask you another dumb question because I'm now an endocrinologist. What exactly does that entail?
And what's the difference between that and just having a GP, a general practitioner?
Yes, okay. Good question.
So endocrinologists, they are a physician, but they take it a step further and specialize in the endocrine system. So endocrinologists everywhere focus on disorders and dyscharias of the endocrine system. They specialize with diabetes and thyroid issues, adrenal issues, all kinds.
Hormones.
Yes, basically. Anything hormonal, they deal with.
Gotcha. I just wanted to define that. Very good.
We're talking about the blood tests. And, of course, you always hear if you're diabetic, especially like the people who sell the materials to test your blood, test it often. And you should. I'll give you the numbers here. And these are the scary numbers. But we have two different sets of numbers.
Okay.
University of Pittsburgh. They state if you have a type 1 diabetic, you're going to lose 11 years of life.
Type 1.
Type 2, eight years.
Okay.
So you get a few more sunsets if you're fortunate. And that's if you're doing it well. There's no date on this test. Once again, the internet, very dangerous. But then
this is a recent test?
This is 2011. And then there's one here I've got, 2015, from the UK. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Scotland, UK. They're saying if you're a type 1 diabetic, your life is reduced 20 years. And if you're a type 2 diabetic, 16. So,
but according to what Donna just said, that do you find those numbers high or low? What do you think about that?
Well, what it says to me is stay out of the United Kingdom because obviously
bangers and mash will take you out.
It's a matter of choices.
Absolutely, and you know, honestly, I hear those numbers and I think I don't get excited about them, and the reason is each person's an individual, and each person has a great deal of control over their destiny. And if we looked at the numbers from 100 years ago, what we would have seen would be much, much different. So the life expectancy of somebody before the advent of insulin, say, for instance, a patient with type 1 diabetes, was about a year. Their prognosis was horrible.
Okay.
They put them on starvation diets. They said, you know, we're going to try everything. Well, then insulin came around, and it changed everything. Mm-hmm. The life expectancy of somebody with type 2 was 6 to 8 years, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
On that.
Yeah. And that was and actually, the little I do know about the history of diabetes here, Banting or Bunting? I have to look up the name. The man who actually came up with the insulin through his research only had a bachelor's. Who would have thought?
Really?
Yeah.
He was at night school at Gateway Tech.
It was he totally sidecarred the idea, derailed it. But anyway, the thing was, they gave him a very small operating budget, a couple $100 and a few dogs and a student. And within a year or two, they realized it's the insulin doing it. And then for production's sake, they went to cattle because cattle produces larger amounts of insulin than obviously dogs would because of the size.
In the first, you know, back in the day when insulin first came out, I believe they used pigs out very often, too. A lot of the physicians still refer to. I remember the days when we had to give people pig insulin.
Rabbi, I got some good news, I got some bad news.
Oh, yes. I guess you'd have to make choices at that point.
Yeah, seriously, that was a choice. I mean, not trying to make fun, but that's true.
Yep.
And now we have such an array of insulins and different methods to control the prognosis of one's blood sugar control. So we know the exciting part to me is, and the reason I don't get excited about numbers too much, I mean, they're astronomical. I do get excited about some of them, like the huge prevalence of prediabetes. But individually, when we look at it from a specific person's perspective, we look at the control that individual has, and we know that if we can control blood sugar levels as close to normal as possible, that we can prevent a lot of the awful complications that occur in diabetes. And that's what I mean by I don't look at the numbers and get excited. As a mother of a type 1 diabetic, I couldn't live that way. I couldn't live that way and think, oh, this is doom and gloom.
Sure.
There's a lot that can be done. There's a lot that we can do to determine our own prognosis. So, and the number one thing is making sure blood sugar is under very good control as much as possible.
There you go.
So blood sugar monitoring. I mean, we have so many tools nowadays that are so much better than they were at the start of this. Now we have glucometers. We have insulin pumps. We have we can very closely mimic what our body should be doing.
You mentioned during the break a patient that you ran into once, a diabetic since the 20s, didn't you say?
I had a patient. Well, you've seen many patients that are living much longer now with diabetes than they ever have before. But I have had the privilege of having a patient that was diagnosed around the time of the time that insulin was invented. And she
type 1.
Yes, yeah. Type 1. And
it was so old, she had type Roman numeral 1.
Yes,
that's how old
this
lady was. Okay, well, there you go.
she was old. Okay.
And, you know, you can read lots of articles. There's lots of patients. I mean, the numbers are still low, but they're growing, and that's the exciting part of it is that we're seeing more and more patients like that are living much longer with type 1 diabetes. So the prognosis is improving, but it's 100% determined on how well that patient self-manages.
We keep coming back to the word choice.
Well, it's a discipline, isn't it? I mean, you have to make choices every day, not just once.
Yes, absolutely, and that's why the tools that we use to self-monitor, glucometers, you know, the taking medication as prescribed, making sure you follow a good meal plan, keeping that diabetes and that blood sugar under control determines how well somebody's prognosis is going to be. So as educators, physicians, the healthcare team, we're a very small piece to the. I mean, we provide the tools, we get people in the right direction, but most of any person with diabetes, most of their prognosis is going to be determined based on how well they manage day to day.
Excellent. Oh, Donna Swanson, UHS, thank you so much for stopping by and giving us at least the beginnings, laying down the foundation, if you will, because it sounds like the decisions you make today affect tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And we decided to have you here today. Could you come back and join us again?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, good. Thanks for being here.
Okay, and we're in our last minute, give or take, of course. We must thank Russ Weller, thank you so much for the button pushing, Russ. And
Russ, are you diabetic?
No, sir.
I got some Hostess cakes, so in the car.
If you have any questions, I head out to the website.
Little Debbie snack
website,
cakes.
TheDiabeticShow.com. You can ask them. You can get the podcast there, ask some questions. We'll get it all laid out.
And we'll be back. We appreciate you listening. This is the first of many. And thanks for setting this up, Mark. This is Mark's idea, and I'm just riding sidecar. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, David Cole. If it wasn't for David Cole, we probably would have had to go to a different radio station. So thank you very much, Dr. Cole. 91.1 FM, WGTD, this was the Diabetic Show. No sugar tonight, no coffee. No sugar tonight, tea. No sugar to stand beside me. No sugar to ride.
WGTD HD2 plays jazz, big band blues, and more 24/7 on your HD radio, desktop computer, or mobile device. For access options and our new program schedule, visit WGTD.org and click HD2.